Welcome to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Dialing up the latest tactics and hottest trends, we're here to help you take your B2B game from stagnant to stellar.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Marianne. And together, we're ready to answer your burning B2B sales and marketing questions.
Each episode, we'll tackle a need-to-know topic in the ever-evolving world of B2B sales and marketing. We'll break it down with actionable takeaways you can implement right away.
And because you don't get results without real talk, we're wrapping up every show with a quick Q&A segment. So fire away with your burning questions.
Whether you're a seasoned sales leader or a marketing veteran, the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline is your one-stop shop to take your B2B efforts to the next level.
Hi, Emily.
Hello, Marianne.
All right. Today's episode is about customer success stories. I'm really excited to talk about this one with you.
Me too. I think they are so important. And the amount of people I see that don't have any kind of social proof is amazing. So I'm excited to discuss.
Okay, perfect. Well, great. Let's dive right in. I love it. Let's get into it. So why do you think they matter in B2B sales and marketing specifically?
So if you have a product, well, I mean, even products, right? Like even products on Amazon or wherever, like people go to the reviews, you want to see the reviews, but it's even harder in like B2B, specifically like service industries or industries where you're selling yourself or your
expertise.
Like, yeah, your expertise. The social proof I feel is just invaluable. Like people don't want to commit hundreds of thousands of dollars to your business if they have no real example of it working.
Especially when it is a service, when it is a intangible, you know, an non-returnable, right?
Yeah.
They have to trust you.
Wow.
They have to trust you. They do. They have to trust you. Building trust. And how else to do that from somebody else saying, this person's trustworthy.
It worked for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that's the biggest, it's hard to dive into something. It's hard to actually commit and pull the trigger on something if you have no idea if others are doing it, if others are liking it, how it's working for other people, what the ROI is going to be. Like it really does. And I think we'll talk about this later on in the episode, but how you position your success stories and how you actually lay out your case study is what makes it impactful. Just having a one-liner that says, you know, they did good for me on your website. Like that isn't actually a helpful case study. Yeah. It's really the details. Yeah.
Well, and you said, you're shocked by how many people don't use case studies and don't have them. And I think that's another reason people should, is that it helps stand out from their competition. If you're comparing to services, to B2B products, to B2B services, being able to read a case study on one, and if another one doesn't have one, that would make a big difference on your purchase options.
Totally. And I think getting case studies too, like there are many different ways to repurpose and reuse case studies. You could start out as creating a video, and then maybe go, you know, pull out some quotes from it and use those quotes on social media or on your website. And you could even then like build out a more formalized like PDF file, but like you don't have to have a ton of them is my point. Like you could have one or two really solid case studies of example clients that are like the perfect client for you and use that everywhere and just really promote the heck out of it.
Right. And then lastly, I would just say it shortens the sales cycle because, I mean, we think of it as like, is that going to close my business? If somebody reads a case study, is that really going to close it? But reframing, is it going to close the business or is it going to shorten the sales cycle somewhere along the way? Hopefully your case study builds that trust and answers questions that they had that they weren't asking you directly or you didn't answer as well directly. And so it can just shorten that sales cycle, build that trust more quickly and bring them along in their sales process.
Yeah. And whether or not you actually send it to them in your sales process, they're going to be looking. Like they're going to be going on Google, looking at reviews. They're going to be going on your social media. They're going to be trying to see if you have logos on your website to go see. Yeah. Like they're going to be checking out and figuring out for themselves if your product works. So you may as well have really solid case studies to just go ahead and have live on display for them so that, you know, you're coming forward with that information versus them like trying to like figure it out and then potentially ending up going somewhere else because they had case studies and they saw that social proof they needed to feel good about moving forward.
Right. And I know that some people don't want to use a company name or a person's name, but I always encourage people to try to do that because using an actual name of a company or a person really does like that helps build. That's like part of the psychology of building the social proof that is real and not abstract. Like, oh, we helped a company and Jane said is not as powerful. That there's just the social proof is there. You need a person and a real label.
I hear that a lot, especially with like service businesses, B2B, like people are worried about poaching clients. Like, I don't want anyone to know who my clients are because I, you know, don't want the, you know, next door neighbor to steal them. But I actually feel like if it's a solid case study and you have legitimate results with them and so much so that they're willing to do a case study for you, odds are like you've secured their business for, you know, I mean, as long as you keep getting results and they keep having the same success, like they're not going to go anywhere just because someone comes in and says, hey, I can offer you something better. Like they, you know, at the end of the day, like, right.
Well, I mean, I would just say, have you ever seen that happen? Because we've been doing this for a long time and I've never seen that happen, but I do see the fear a lot. It's kind of like the email marketing fear when people don't want to send marketing emails because they're scared people will unsubscribe, but rarely do. I mean, our goal is to send a lot of email marketing for our clients and we rarely see the email marketing unsubscribe rate go higher than
30%. Yeah, right.
So, you know, I just say it's one of those things, do it until it tells you. Until you have proof or data to not. So I would say if you have had case studies published where you have lost a big client that's been poached, I would understand that a little more. But I think the fear tends to typically be a little more irrational and not actually factual.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I've overcome this type of thing with clients by just being a bit more like vague. Like you could have a, you know, you could have the industry, like you could say like, you know, top 10 media client
and in the Virginia area.
Yeah. Like you could be like vague and have like not actually like name them or name, you know, have their logo or anything like that. But you could like specify, like, you know, if there's a quote, you could say like marketing manager, been there 10 years or, you know, like you could build out the case study, but it just doesn't give the same excitement, in my opinion, as like actually knowing the business, having that name recognition and knowing that that business trusted you with like anyone could just be vague. So I do think that it's a fine alternative. It's better than certainly better than no case studies.
So I'll also say, I think that having a customer tell their story is great because it shows that, you know, that social proof, like this worked for them, but also how you tell the story and just like thinking of storytelling in general, the story itself is really important. So what's incorporated in your case study? What do you include? How do you tell the story from beginning to an end? Like the challenge that they have and then tied up with a bow at the end. Like what are the steps of that? I think that is as important as this is a real person that we're relating to. So I think the storytelling element is crucial in a case study.
I agree. Let's talk about what should go in it as far as storytelling. And I will also preface this conversation by saying you, listener, your business needs to be telling the story on behalf of your client. So I've seen case studies go awry when you just expect the client to show up with all the information or have like, just like give them nothing. You should arm them with the results you want them to share. So like before you actually do the case study, like send them, say, you know, this is what you came to, this is why you signed on with us. This is how we've helped you. These are the exact numbers. Like you're the one with the numbers. You're the one tracking the success, not them. So
you're also the one doing the legwork. If you want the case study, you need to be the one to write it. Obviously they need to approve it. Hopefully you can get good quotes for it from them, directly from them, not from you. But yeah, totally. You got to do the legwork. You got to write the story.
The compelling case studies are the ones that say, we saw 300 times ROI. We saw X, Y, like the things that require a little bit of like
data,
numbers, digging. Like your customer could show up and say, we really like working with XYZ company. They are so nice and they always answer our emails. And like, that's fine too, but that's not actually a true compelling case study testimonial.
Yeah. Okay. You're going to the trouble to make this. You got to make it move
the needle. Okay. So let's talk about what should go in. The challenge, the reason someone was brought to the business. That's always a very compelling, because people resonate with that.
The pain point they have when they're shopping.
Yes. Uh-huh. They say, oh, I have that. I feel that. That was me. I should also explore this solution because this person was feeling how I feel. And that problem has been solved because of this company.
And people know that, right? It's the same thing that what's in your target persona? What are the pain points that your target persona has before they work with you, right? Like in your target persona, you've probably identified those. So yeah, taking that out.
Yep.
Hopefully this case study you're doing is on somebody who fits into that target persona. So that's a great pull out.
Yep.
And then obviously the solution, right? Like what solution you offer that fits in that.
Yep. I would say also like the implementation, the onboarding, the experience, how it actually happened,
I got working with you specifically. And that's the thing that people love to tell about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jeremy is so nice. I'm so glad we had the experience of working with him. That makes the big impact.
He always responded to my emails, even late at night.
People love to tell that part of the story, but that's not the whole case study.
Right.
You should work with me just because Jeremy's great or whatever it is. Implementation, though, should be included. I agree.
Okay. And then the real meat and potatoes of the case study, which is the data, the ROI, that is why they're going to spend their money is the data. So if you have a lot of warm and fuzzies throughout, but you don't actually have any data to support it, then people are going to look to the company that has the data to back up the claims.
Give us the numbers. Got to have the numbers.
Okay. Anything else?
I mean, I think that like that whole, all of those sections can be written by the listener. But then I think that adding the human element of the person being interviewed for the case study that came to work for you, like what emotions they had, what quotes they can give you, like something that's going to make it really personal. So it's not just the story written by you, but like incorporating the human emotional element with their quotes of the mushy gushy, and them talking in their way of saying how much they enjoyed working with you or whatever that is. So like humanizing the entire case study and the story that you've written by the person.
Yep. Love it. I agree. Human element for sure. The emotions, the transformation, all of that. Okay, let's talk about some pitfalls. We've done a lot of case studies and, you know, Marianne and I could talk all day about our case study process and everything that we do. Cause I mean, this is a big part of what we do for
and
our clients.
It's changed. It's definitely changed over time.
All the time it's changing. So let's talk about some of like the common mistakes we see people doing that don't work with us or that they did before working with us that we often have to like fix and correct.
Okay.
Great. Okay. I'll start. I think confusing case studies, too much detail, like it doesn't actually, because people don't want to like read a novel. They want like the beginning, the middle, and the end. Like they want to know what's going on very quickly.
Right.
So I think like a skimmable, easily digestible piece of content versus like a novel.
Totally agree, because people get excited about this kind of thing and then they want to give too much. And that's, you know, you still have to write it for the user experience here. Okay.
Okay.
I agree with that. I would say spending too much time on the product itself and not the journey. So we talked about like opening with pain point and closing like with their experience, that and the results and like the actual what they got out of it, and not just talking about how like a case study is not a product highlight. And I think sometimes people can get caught up on that.
Yes, I totally agree. Okay. Another one is old case studies. I mean, I think it's fine to have a case study that's like 3, 4, 5 years old. But I mean, I've seen customers who have case studies.
I get guilty of this too, because it's like you can rationalize in your head, well, they're still a customer and I think it still applies. But yes, no, people don't want to read old case studies. That's a great one.
And especially like if they're talking about something that you like really don't even do anymore, or if it's like in an industry that you don't really focus in, like they just become really, I think it's important, and it's different if it's a video. I know.
Well, it's not powerful. Okay, great. I'm glad you helped a company 5 years ago, but like a lot changes in 5 years. People want something more recent. So I feel guilty on that one, because I can think of like not wanting to take them down if they're already created and put up, but you're exactly right. You have to recreate them.
Yeah. Cause I mean, there's probably new, better numbers even to share.
Totally. So. Totally.
Okay.
Okay. I will say a more recent pitfall that we're seeing is just using AI to create these and having them be too generic. Like you can tell that they're not authentic. You can tell they're not real. Like you can't just go to AI and tell them things to create a case study story. I think that obviously we are proponents of using AI in your process to help you, but a pitfall I'm seeing is really generic, not real, inauthentic, probably AI created, leaning too heavily on AI or not humanizing the experience of the journey.
Yeah. Totally agree. And even like in HubSpot, you can now, if you have Content Hub, you can like go into Content Hub and create a case study in HubSpot.
AI will. Yeah.
AI will do it, but you have to give it the data and the information. And I think that's where the mix between the two pitfalls we shared are really like the generic, unauthentic, you know, everything, but then also just not having the data. And I think if you're just storytelling and you're not actually sharing the facts, that could be anyone. Like any one of your clients has warm and fuzzies to share about you. I think where you get into the more like authentic, real case studies are when you actually are sharing the numbers, the real reason that they are renewing with you every single year. That is the real case study.
Right.
I will also add that, and it's not really a pitfall, but I do think it's something that people don't think about that they should. I mean, if you're going to pour time and energy into a case study, I mean, if you're working with an agency, like you're obviously not the one pouring energy into it, but if you're not working with an agency, like this is you doing it. Like you are emailing the clients, you are getting all, like it's time and energy and you have to interview them and do everything. If you are doing it yourself, think about the industries, because not only do people want to see social proof, but they want to see, did it work for someone like me? Mm-hmm. We see that all the time. I used to be in sales. I only wanted to send case studies that were like their next door neighbor who does exactly what they do, saw really good results for exactly what they could buy. Like, and if you do a case study on an industry that's maybe like a one-off industry that just like really loves you, or, you know, not really like your North Star industry that you're actively going after, I don't think the case study will be as impactful as you would hope it to be, because it doesn't actually speak to the audience you're going after.
And people ask us for success stories in their industry, in our sales process. People want to know. So, and industry does matter to them. So that is a good call out.
Yeah. I mean, people don't, someone in, you know, that sells radio doesn't want to see a case study of how great we did with a, you know, PEO or an outsourced HR company. Like those aren't, that's apples to oranges. Like we could still do great work for both industries, but you know, it's people want to see how it worked for people like them.
Sure.
Okay. Using success stories in marketing. I talked about this actually a little earlier, but.
So what do you do with it once you create? So yay. We've gone through all the steps of like how to create a great case study and why you should and what is included in it and what pitfalls to avoid. But it's like, now what? Mm-hmm. Like, we could make a case for putting it on your website and letting people find it on their own and use it. But like, if you make a great case study, you should be proactively using that in other ways too. Your sales team should be using it as a sales enablement piece. They should be using it as part of their, maybe if not part of their proposal, part of their pitch and part of their presentation to their prospects, part of their sales process, like integrating it into their sequences. And
Almost always after I after I attend a sales call and I hang up the phone, my first step is to recap what we talked about and send them to our case studies. Like that is always like step one, because you just hung up with them. You had a good experience. You talked about what you can do to help them. And now I'm following up and I'm proving it.
I'm not full of, you know,
baloney.
Right. I'm not full of baloney. Check out what this guy, check out this guy's story, who I was.
Right. Exactly. I also think too, I talked about it a little earlier, and you can, if you, I know we're HubSpot plugs over here, but if you have HubSpot Content Hub, you can actually use the Content Remix for this. But if you don't have HubSpot, that's okay. You make a case study. You can take that and make it into a million different things. You could take a case study and make it into a blog. You could take a case study and make it into a social media graphic. You could then post it on your stories on Instagram. Like there's so many different things you can do with a case study. You would be remiss to make an entire case study and then just have a PDF file that sits on your website.
Right. And also, I mean, just like every other piece of content, I know that we think often like it's either sales enablement content or marketing content, but a case study is truly both with no edits needed. Sales can absolutely should be using it in their process, and marketing can be using it in their process when they're talking to people much more top of the funnel. Yeah. You can really use it in your campaign and a lot of things.
Lead nurturing, like even a lead nurturing, like let's say someone comes to your website and downloads a one sheet or an ebook.
Right.
Like next step, check out our case studies. Like right. There's no reason to not promote them everywhere.
Right. Right. Okay. So lots of places to use them. Yes. How do you know if they're working? I would say is the next question. And
yeah. I mean, like you're going to pour all this time and energy. You're going to, you know, design it and publish it and make it. And people want to know, like, is it worth my time and energy? And I think that's a hard one. Like I do. I think that knowing if it's working is hard. Like, I don't know that there is, I mean, you can look at the analytics of the pages. Like you could see how many people are visiting your case studies page, how many
track engagement looking. For sure. Of course. Yeah. Just like we would anything else. And then use it for conversation. Like I really think just like other things in the sales process, it is something that can help accelerate your sales process. And so tracking your deals pipeline, how quickly things move through based on what content they're looking at in between. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would just say tracking it the same way you track other content would be a good way to do it.
And like, if you do use, you know, HubSpot as your CRM, I'm just going to throw it out again. You could see in the activity timeline of the contact if one of the pages they looked at was the case study. Like you could see that information and kind of use that as some, you know, like if you're, whether or not you should invest more time in case studies, you could look at the last 30 deals that closed and see if right. they ever looked at the case study page. Like that could be, I don't know.
I love it. Something. Let's put our case studies page in the show notes.
So you
can see some of our case studies and how we created them. And if anyone has any extra questions about how to create them or anything, just reach out to us. We love to hear from you guys. Mm-hmm. Should we go into questions?
Let's do it. Yeah. All right. So question number one, we're dealing with longer sales cycles. What strategies can we use to help prospects engage and move through the funnel?
Good question. Hard to answer without more details, I would say. I agree. There's a lot of tactics you could take.
I mean, one tactic, hey, make a case study. Send it, use it.
Yeah, no. Sure. Yeah, use case study. See if that speeds it up. I would say, I don't know. I think there's so many different routes to go down with that. And there's not enough information there to fully answer that question. Book a meeting with us. We'll ask you some discovery questions to figure out what you can do to speed it up. There's a lot of different tactics to take.
I agree. I mean, you could go with like automation. You could have, you know, sales sequences. You could send them.
Are you using content in your sales process right now? Yeah.
Are you engaging with them on LinkedIn and maybe messaging with them in a couple of different areas? You could email, call, LinkedIn message. Like there's so many different things.
And also just like figuring out where they're losing trust. Like why is it longer? Why they're not seeing value and trust earlier in the process? How can you incorporate those things?
I mean, even more so, like before someone even comes to talk to sales, they're probably looking at your website and they're like mm-hmm. doing some research. Like, is your website set up to educate them before they're even ready to talk to you? Like, do you have blogs? Do you have a resource page? Do you have ways for them to learn about what you do? Like, are they coming to you as that, or are they going to your competition? Like that, like even more before we get to even the sales process. Yeah.
And are you closing as many deals? Is it just your sales process is slower, but your deal close rate is the same? You know, there's a lot of questions there.
Totally. So reach out to us.
Yeah. So that was an unhelpful answer that says we need to, you need more help than just a Q&A. Okay. Next question, our email open and response rate are dropping. What adjustments should we make to our email marketing approach to re-engage prospects?
So they're dropping. So, okay. I think
email open rates are dropping. Well, there's kind of just one for email open rates dropping. You need to improve your subject line. If people aren't opening your email, I mean, it absolutely could send, but have to do with who you're sending it to. Are your list segments?
That's what I was going
to
say. Yeah. So I agree. Email subject line is like number one priority for actually getting an open rate.
That is so overlooked, by the way. Oh my goodness. People work so hard to make emails and then they spend no time on their subject line. And then people don't get to
people
see
don't even
email
read it.
They've created.
Mm-hmm. But additionally, you should look at whether you are sending content to the right. Like, are you zoomed in enough?
Right.
Could you zoom in more? Could you segment your list to be, you know, industry specific and send the same email, but with specific industry subject lines? Like, what could you do to, like zoom in more?
Okay. So that's open, but response are totally, that's a different answer. How do you get more response rates? What are your calls to action? What are you asking people to do? Are you asking them to respond? Are you
asking them to download something?
Yeah. What are you asking them to do? Are you getting to bottom of the funnel of an ask on to top of a funnel of a send? I think response is a totally different thing when you're dealing with CTA. Do you have too many CTAs in your emails? Sometimes I see people have bad results that are sending their user or their prospect who's reading the email to too many different places.
Right.
Really narrow in on your focus. What do you want them to do? You can maybe give them more than one link to do what you want them to do, but asking them for one thing at a time and not asking them for too many.
Yeah, totally agree. And I mean, that even leads me further down the path. And again, like reach out to us because I am curious to learn more, but you know, are they, when we say responding, like, are they taking action or are they clicking? Because if they're clicking and then they're not actually taking the action you're asking them to do, it could have something to do with the landing page. Like we could get, I mean, you could be asking too many questions on the form, or you could be, it shouldn't even be a gated piece of content, or maybe the event doesn't resonate with people and you should change the title. Like there's so many things here, but I think overall the answer to the question is, make adjustments.
But focus on open, because you can always, if with the analytics, you can know who's opening and who's clicking. So even if they're not responding, well, it kind of depends what you mean by response, I guess. But
I know, I can't figure out the response.
You can zoom in on who is interacting.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Those are the only two questions we had. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thanks for submitting questions. Please engage with us and share your B2B sales and marketing questions on LinkedIn. You can leave us a voicemail in the show notes, or you can send us an email and we'll answer them. We answer them on all of our shows. So follow our podcast for more insights and visit the LeadG2 website or blog for additional resources.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Don't forget to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And if you've got a question for us, head to the show notes and let us know what's on your mind.
And visit our website, leadg2.com, where you can find even more helpful B2B sales and marketing resources.